AI.
A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on promoting the earth, telling where we're gonna plant our seed.
See a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome. Glad you can join us for Ecologic at a New Time. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for a Wednesday, August 2nd, 2023.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Today, our guests are Greenpeace's Viola Volgamuth and Dr. Nicolay Angelov from University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth. We'll be talking about fast fashion. When we were putting the show together, we had a hard time finding someone in the U.S. to talk about the subject. But then how many people want to go up against the U.S. fashion industry? We'll talk about Massachusetts' rejection first of wastewater dumping into Cape Cod Bay, groundwater pollution from factories, and holes in the ionosphere.
We try to open every show with good news. While we're waiting for Governor Hochul to sign the Save the Hudson bill, A7208 and S6893, we learn that other states are not dallying. Massachusetts recently denied Holtec's plan to dump into Cape Cod Bay the radioactive wastewater from the Pilgrim nuclear reactor that they are decommissioning. From CourthouseNews.com. The rejection from the Massachusetts Environment Department comes months after Holtec drew the ire of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency over its plan to discharge Pilgrim's wastewater, which would largely come from the plant's 40-foot-deep pool used to cool off spent fuel rods. The EPA in December told the company that any discharge would violate the terms of its National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit, which, as written, bars any releases from the plant's spent fuel pool. Now, New York laws are different, so to stop the potential wastewater dumping, we need the governor to sign the bipartisan bill. Her number is 518-474-8390. That's 518-474-8390.
Putting factories near waterways is a tradition that goes back hundreds of years. So is dumping waste in or near that water. From an article by Nick Ogasa in Science News Magazine comes this. Modern waste is often toxic or radioactive, so many dumps near water are Superfund sites, which are particularly high levels of dangerous pollution. The sea level rise part of climate change is threatening to put that waste into the water at hundreds of sites, with New Jersey having the most. Geologists and hydrologists are pointing out that it's not enough to simply move people inland as the seas rise. The garbage has to be moved too. We link to the full article from our website, www.ecoradio.org.
I must say that I have been wary of space ventures ever since I read that the upper atmosphere can be damaged. We live in an era when people with money can choose to push past science boundaries without hesitation or regard to how it affects people or the planet. This time, we're not just talking about a local environment, but with the thin protections this planet has from extreme ultraviolet radiation from the sun. Seriously, folks, we are still learning what the hazards are. Everyone, every country, every billionaire wants to explore the unknown. Well, maybe not everyone, but it's very human. Even I have dreamed of going to space since I was a little girl. But let's take an extra level of caution and responsibility and do some more research. The hole in the ionosphere caused by the rocket can last for hours. Many launches create holes in the ionosphere that last for different periods of time. Reionization happens when the sun comes up. We need to know how serious it is. What happens when space travel increases and many holes in the ionosphere need to be repaired? Frequency has to be considered. There are so many unknowns. Rockets are getting increasingly more powerful, so look for more and bigger holes. Another consideration is that the launch itself damages the local environment. This is just something to keep on your radar, everybody. Every innovation has to be scrutinized.
U.S. District Judge Mark Cohen gave Cop City activists more time to collect signatures for the ballot referendum on Cop City, saying that the city, quote, offered no specifics as to why permitting non-resident plaintiffs to gather signatures will cause any disruption to the political process. He ruled that the 60-day period for gathering signatures until mid-August should be restarted, giving organizers until late September to gather the tens of thousands of signatures still needed for the proposed referendum to get on the ballot. It can still happen. And now we welcome our guest. Please introduce yourself. Viola?
Yeah, hello. I'm Viola from Greenpeace, based in Hamburg in Germany. I'm super happy to be here, actually, and to talk about my passion, and that is fight fast fashion. So I'm behind and standing with the Detox My Fashion campaign from Greenpeace since 2011. We are fighting, actually, the catastrophic damage textile industry it's bringing to this planet, it's bringing to the people, firstly, just in Southeast Asia, where the production is standing, so a lot work was done on textile factories there and seeing putting a name on this damage we had there. But now more in Southeast Asia or in Africa where all the rubbish land up.
And Nick?
My name is Nikolai Angelov. I'm an associate professor of public policy at the University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth. And I have been researching textile pollution and sustainable fashion innovation for the last 10 years. Have two books on the subject. And I have heavily relied on Greenpeace's investigative work, particularly in their series Toxic Threads that was launched, I believe, in 2012, with a series of reports that were recording the particular toxins being used in textile manufacturing, the volumes and levels of effluents that were expelled in waterways in Southeast Asia, mostly, as Viola was saying. And I'm excited to be here to have this discussion about the ecological impact of the fastly and massively growing apparel sector.
So let's go to basics and explain what is fast fashion and why do people need to care about it.
Nick?
Amy. Nick.
The way you say it really quickly is fast fashion is very affordable, very cheap clothing. The saying in the industry is that retails for the price of a sandwich that can be worn and discarded quickly without much of what in retail parlance is known as buyer remorse, which has always been the marketing bane of retailers. What buyer remorse is when you and I go to the store and we succumb to stimulation to buy clothing and then spend way too much money on it. And then we take it home and realize that we made a mistake, and then we go back and return it. So low rates of return, because clothes are so cheap that why would you return them? Wear them quickly, change your styles at whim, following trends, and then discard the clothes and buy new ones.
Yeah, so I totally agree. So I would even say fast fashion, and now we have even ultra fast fashion, make textiles was something traditional, something good, something special for people to to single use plastic waste, because nothing else. Textiles is these days, so 70% of these textiles are made from synthetic fibers, polyester, made actually from oil and gas. So they become plastic waste. And just to have one number, between 2000 and 2014, the amount of textiles that got produced was doubled, but the time we are wearing them is just the half of the time. So that means textiles was something special, became just single-use plastic waste full of chemicals and land up actually in the global south and pollute the whole planet.
I'm just amazed to think of clothing in the same way that I think of plastic straws and plastic bags.
Really is.
The
innovation in textile manufacturing has moved towards the production of finer and finer yarns that are petro-based. They're derived from petroleum. And it's moving past clothing also to other apparel and other textile materials that we know. In the U.S. here, you probably have seen the commercial for Sheiks. They call it the whole system. And it says it breathes so much better than cotton. Well, yeah, it does, because it's cheap polyester. So technically is the same product as a plastic bag, but it's presented to us in a way that is versatile, breathable, and affordable. So the petrochemical innovation in textiles have moved us to a place where, as Viola was saying, the core fabric for decades, which has been cotton, is now secondary, and petrochemical inputs are used in what we call poly blends. And almost everything that we're wearing now is a poly blend. If it's not 100% polyester, it is a mix of natural fibers, cotton basically, and then polyester with it.
And that is actually one of the biggest problems, because it's not just that it's plastic rubbish who land up somewhere in the environment and in the end means become micro or nanoplastic and come back to us. We're eating it, we're drinking it, or we're breathing it. It's even more because this kind of textiles are mixed fibers, you know, makes them a bit elastic, makes them a bit blue, makes them a bit long lasting and so on. And that means in the end, you can't recycle them. So for most of those textiles, there is no recycling possibility in this world. Even if you would have them in US, if you would have them in Europe, you can't recycle them. And that means they are nothing else than waste. And that's how we deal with them. So we export them in countries of the global south. And they're not just plastic, they're also full of chemicals. So the textile industry is one of the biggest users of chemicals. Up to 3,500 different kinds of chemicals get used in the textile industry. Yeah? And that's crazy, because often we don't even know how these chemicals together are working. And it's not just that they maybe are in the end in our textiles. Of course, if they land up there, they are used in a much more massive amounts beforehand in the countries in Southeast Asia. So that means those people are in contact with these chemicals. They are just land up in the environment. They land up in a water. They're using this water, I don't know, for feeding, for drinking the animals, or for watering the gardens. And that's crazy, because those chemicals doesn't stay there. They land up everywhere. We found them in the air. We found them actually in the Himalayan. We found them in polar bear's liver. You know, think about it. It's so crazy, is it? These chemicals everywhere. And that's why it's a real much bigger issue than we think. If you talk about textiles, it's a real big problem, and we have to tackle it, because I think there's no other business that's so far away from circularity. Just 0.1 to 1% of the textiles get recycled to new textiles. That's crazy.
When they were natural fibers, you could use old clothes for rags. Now they don't absorb anything. They're useless. They're landfill.
Exactly. And when they were old textiles, they used to be biodegradable. Even with chemicals in them and the dyes, still the yarn would fall apart. Plastics do not. And when we talk about how big the problem is, a new article came out today in an engineering journal analyzing the effluence of 18 factories in Bangladesh. Bangladesh is one of the main textile producers. I'll give the metrics in kilograms and in European metrics, but translate them into pounds for the American audience. For 1 kilogram of fabric, half a kilogram of textiles is used. So if you think in terms of what 1 kilogram is about 2 pounds. So for two pounds of fabric, you have a pound of chemicals. For those chemicals to be actually absorbed into the yarn, the water amounts required are 164 liters. So that's, what is that?
Well, liters are similar to a quart.
So, yeah, similar to a quart. So if a liter is about 4 gallons, so that's about 70 gallons of water for 1 pound of textiles that gets polluted and gets expelled into waterways.
Yeah, but actually the good thing is textiles are beautiful. People love to wear textiles. It's something art, you know. Actually, we want to show that we are two different groups and so on. And the good thing is there are so many textiles out there. Even if we would stop buying them right now, calculations said you have probably enough for the next 10 years. And that's so cool because we have so many alternatives to buying new, so many alternatives to producing new. And we can just actually should start to celebrate and to use them.
So let's talk about circularity. You mentioned that to us another time. What are the solutions? We need to know that there are something out there with hope.
Yeah.
Everybody's so, nodding their head on this.
Yeah. No, that's a great thing about it, because there are so many solutions for textiles. It means the most sustainable textile is those ones that you don't have to newly produce. And that means, I mean, probably every one of us now secondhand, something that was actually a whole idea that was based on textiles. We have it now also for electronic gears or other things, but that is something so easy. Everybody knows the flea market. You can have it online. You have it on apps. You have it even on stores now. So it's something everywhere. It's actually the most growing market on textiles. So it's saying that up to 20% of the textile market should be the second hand in the next years. So it's crazy. But the other thing actually is there's you wear just, I have also something secondhand dress just on me. The other thing is, you know, we just learn, especially in big cities, we have the whole idea of circular economy. So what you want is a new feeling. So why do we wear textiles? Why do we wear a new dress? You want to have a great evening. You want to look beautiful. Actually, you want to have a feeling. You don't need a textile for it, or you don't need a new textile for it. Oh. That means we have to rethink the way how we can gain the special feeling, the special emotion. And that means you can rent it, you can borrow it, you can share it. There are so many possibilities that makes you new. And being more sustainable and even cheaper, because you don't have to buy it and you have better clothes in the end. So that is something I love so much. And as more as I work with people, I mean, I'm a pharmacist. I'm used to work on chemicals and so on, but I work more with influencers and people who do this. You know, now I'm on fashion shows and think, oh my God, where did I land up here? You know, so but what I realize is people who start with alternatives, they are so more nice dressed. They are so more self-confidence, and I just see the alternatives are not depressing. They're just so beautiful, and I just would love to have all people join us, because it's much more fun there.
Absolutely. So the upcycling business model is growing, and the entrepreneurship is developing in the entire sector, from rent options. Major retailers are now offering a rental option, including Bloomingdale's. You can have a monthly subscription to a rental service where if you're required to dress a certain way for business, you can just rent new clothes in return. The other retailing option that's growing is mass customization is the term. Mass customization is retailers and entrepreneurs like Stitch Fix, kind of called also the virtual seamstress model, where you are encouraged to create your own digital profile with them and have input on the design of the clothes. You can tell them what colors you want, what materials you want, and you work with stylists and actual tailors to tailor clothes to you, to your measurements, so that, again, you can get something that really fits you and that you are vested in, so you're part of the creating process. The other aspect that's growing is what I'm wearing, an entrepreneur called Refried Apparel. This is all made from discarded material. So it's new clothing made from discarded and sold material, which is, again, something that's growing a lot. A lot of folks are doing it. We can have a whole other show about the innovators that are doing upscaling. Yes. But we're seeing the unused textiles. There's also wonderful developments in the recycling technologies of textiles. As Viola said before, we don't have to make any new materials for the next 10 years. We have so much textile out in the world. Innovators like Evernew out of Seattle have finally developed technology that they can recycle polyblends, and they're creating a yarn that's biodegradable out of those recycling. It's a molecular level recycling. They haven't penetrated the market yet, but they're out there. They're getting funding. They're working on innovation. And Evernew's pitch is that we don't have to make new textile again. We can recycle this again and again and again, make it into new yarns.
Wow.
But I think one very important thing is that we think about real recycling. And for this, and that's why we are also aiming at Greenpeace for international laws and the regulations, we need to make sure that the textiles, if they get produced, are already produced in a way that you can recycle them. So for me, I would say it shouldn't be allowed to put anything on the market anymore that you can't recycle. And I mean, not just maybe possible in the future in a lab. It has to be really on a market recyclable where it lands up. And it is possible, and therefore that's something in Europe, it's just starting, it's a passport, it's called for every textile, it should be in every textile that you can read out in the end, okay, where is it made, how is it made, what kind of material is in it, so that you can recycle it. And just maybe to add one idea, because all these you told are just super great, but sometimes it's, you know, you just, it's Friday and you just want to go shopping and you just, so, and that is so great because there are so many ways of it. And for example, we have an, with Greenpeace, we have something like clothing swap parties. That means you have parties everywhere, often in different cities, also in small cities, big, small, also in the countryside, where you have parties, people come together and you just bring your unwanted clothes, your textiles, your old treasures you don't really wear anymore, and you just share them with somebody else. You know, you get something else, but your textiles get reused. And that is something, it's a great feeling because you really just go there, you know. And I go there nearly every second time to get a violet dress. And I know that violet is not my color and I definitely won't wear it at work. But again, I get it. And then I see, yeah, okay, I don't wear it. So, but I bring it back to the next clothing swap party and I know that somebody else will wear it. And right. So that means you also can have this desire of, you know, I just want to get something new and so on. So that's
and that can be a social event just by itself, right?
You know, I have one of my best friends actually, I made 15 years ago on a clothing swap party, you know, so we were just standing on a text and said, oh, I would love to get it. I know that I never will wear it. So, and it was so funny that we talked about it. And then we started to get to clothing swap parties and we are both work in environmental organizations. So it's really great. It's happening. We had one here in Hamburg, for example, on a Reeperbahn. That means in the middle of Hamburg party people, you don't think about environmental issues. And we had more than 10,000 people joining us and doing this. And that's great to see. So, and that's my biggest learning. People want to use alternatives. They're totally into it if they're attractive to their life and it's something good for the environment. But you need to have them in your surrounding. You need to have them in your all-day life. And they have to be, accessible. So, and therefore, I think that's something you really have to push at society, but also by law and by government. So we have to push that those possibilities are there for us so that we can really use them.
And other good news on that front is, as a professor, I work with universities and with students. I am amazed at how many universities are having clothing swapping options with the students that are student run. Usually it's an environmental club on campus. Every university in America now has a sustainability office or sustainability platform, sustainability entity. Clothes swapping is their major thing that they're doing. I even just learned about an innovation at American University where there's also upcycling. There's teams of students who will make new clothes of the swapped clothes. So the students are responding well to it. It's penetrating the American academic system, and it's on the forefront of attention of young people, which is great.
Yeah, I maintain a couple of websites, and we got a note from one of our readers that, I found these really cool sites that you should include on your one of us. Upcycling and selling your used clothing, and the other one was how to recycle everything. It's like people are into this. It's cool.
So everybody has at some point or other a piece of clothing that can't be recycled because it's got too many holes or too many stains. And what do you do with the end of life end of clothing life stuff? They used to be rags collection places, but they're harder to find.
Because polyester is not as usable as a rag. You can't break it down into...
No, but I mean large rags. A friend of mine in Boston's...
they wanted cotton. They wanted wool. They wanted...
They want the good stuff, probably.
Well, but Viola is the expert here. But the one thing that I just read, that I have been tracking, is the legislation with the European Commission that I think is signed and it's going to be implemented, I want to say, by 2025. But Europe is mandating that all clothing waste is collected in a recyclable way, the way that we're recycling paper and plastic in the U.S. So you'll have three bins now: paper, plastic, and textile.
Five. Really Germans, you know. Yeah, we are good in collecting. So recycling is another thing. We think we are doing it. So it's true. So by 2025, there's a new law. It becomes, it is already decided, and it becomes another place that we have to collecting textiles separately. In Germany, we are doing that already quite good, but it doesn't mean that they get recycled in the end. But we are good in collecting. And but the thing is, now what we are collecting are plastic waste, we are paper, it's then textiles, it's metal, and it's organic. And then we have rest stuff you can't recycle in a good way. But textiles is a big thing, and it's huge amount. So that is very good that it's happened also in other areas. And because having this, it started also the possibility of recycle, because you need to have some clean to put them in different places. So I was just checking out the separation sorting station here in Germany. It's one of the biggest one we have. They have more than 17 different sections then for
textiles. Excuse us, Viola and Nick, as we have to take a short break. We'll be back with our guest soon. All producers need to raise money to keep WBAI on the air to ensure that the bills get paid and the transmission tower keeps transmitting.
WBAI, there is no station like it. You tell us that every time we meet you. We give you content that you don't get on other media. Other stations are full of ads. We're not. We don't tell you how to buy things you don't need. We're sure that you need WBAI. We don't bend to corporate advertisers, WBAI, or at other Pacifica stations, as our funds come from listeners like you and some public service announcements.
We support every environmental issue, so a donation to us is like supporting many groups. Ecologic brings you actions you can take: rallies, marches, direct actions, letters, emails, petitions, concerts, webinars, conferences, lobbying efforts. It's all important. Help us to help community groups get the word out.
I was in a writer's circle at my local library reading Ecologic's upcoming news to them. This is back before Donna and Sally were writing it with me. One of the people told everyone that when she and her husband moved to New York City because of his job, they felt very lonely until they discovered WBAI. Listening to BAI, she realized, we have friends here. Suddenly, she didn't mind having moved out here. There was a specialness to WBAI that goes beyond the shows themselves.
We often hear from people who used to listen to WBAI, usually about how they have rediscovered us and appreciate our independence and the news, information, and entertainment that is so different from corporate media. We have such a great history. Some of us have been listening for decades, not always consistently, but we come back and find good programs.
Some of them are old favorites. Ecologic has been on WBAI for more than 21 years. Help ensure that when you tune in next, we are here for you. Please support us with a donation today to let us know that you're listening. No amount is too small or too big. You can contribute by mail or call 212-209-2950 or go to ecologic.wbai.org.
Those of you who are members, please watch out for the upcoming vote. It will be as important to saving the station as it was back in October 2019. If you have donated at least $25 since last July up to June 30th or volunteered at least 3 hours, you are considered a voting member. There's voting almost every year, so becoming a member is always a good thing. Please send in your $25. This really is your radio station.
When you buy one of those fun blouses from Shane or H&M, you get a kick out of it for a few minutes. But when you contribute to WBAI, you get the satisfaction of contributing to program that you won't hear on corporate media, to a station that amplifies the voices of community groups. So next time you get that impulse, head over to ecologic.wbai.org and send us a few dollars. You'll feel good about it and leave nothing in the landfill.
What were you doing October 2019? It was before COVID, but there was a different threat that knocked on the door. Literally. A rogue group from Pacifica, WBAI's parent organization, were conspiring to close WBAI and sell the radio signal. That's our most valuable asset. They blame others for the problems of the whole. If you want to see WBAI stay afloat, please see this, feel this, hear this radio station as yours. The bad guys are not going away. Just as in the environmental movements, they keep coming back. We must stay vigilant. We all know that money is tight right now, and that goes double for nonprofits and shallower pockets. The people who often care the most are the most disenfranchised. But as Pete Seeger said, it's going to be saved by millions of little things. Let's all chip in to keep our station strong. How much would it hurt your lifestyle to pledge as an Ecologic BAI buddy for $10, $15, or more dollars a month? Please show your support. We need you.
Go to the WBAI archives and listen to an episode of Ecologic that you missed or want to hear again, like this one. www.ecoradio.org has a list of the last 3 years of Ecologic and direct links to hear them.
If you want, you can send a check or money order for your membership and or premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
We really hope that you'll take the time to look through our list of premiums. We are sure you'll find something you'll want. You can find all our premiums on ecologic.wbai.org. That's ecologic.wbai.org.
David Bowie wrote this next song, Fashion, not long after his Berlin period with Brian Eno. And you can hear the influence. Here's David Bowie singing Fashion.
We are the Goon Squad and we're coming to town.
That was David Bowie singing Fashion.
You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein.
We're here with Ken Gale, Viola Velgemuth, and Nikolay Angelov to talking about fast fashion. Tell us, who are the main customers for the fast fashion these days?
Children.
Oh, it depends, actually. Yeah.
Children. The main demographic, according to the retail analysis of the Fashion Academy, is both boys and girls, 12 to 16, is the main market that buys the most apparel items. Historic, that's a big change from the historical legacy of retail, where the main demographic has always been females 18 to 24. Now they're a secondary market. The market is getting younger and younger, and the targeting and marketing is really for teenagers. And there's many reasons for that that we can go over specifically.
Actually, one is that we really changed from fast fashion, where we think it couldn't get even worse, but it does. Because after Corona, we started with the phenomenon you called ultra fast fashion. So that is Shein, that is Temu, that is Cider, just fresh on the market. And these companies based in China are producing without having any shops in the countries, doesn't matter where. So they're just selling straight over the app, straight over TikTok, on Instagram, just commercial by different kind of influencers on different sizes, but straight to the kindergartens, you first have to say. So no, not kindergartens, but they start with people, with youngsters, actually. So the target group is 8-year-old children. And that is super crazy, because that means in the end these textiles land up often without any overseen from parents here in not just in the US, but also in Europe, all over the place. And these textiles are even more worse produced and more full of or chemicals. So that's a real problem that you think it can't be even worse. Yes, it's called ultra fast fashion. Just maybe to have one number. So H&M is producing one sub collection a week. Shein is producing 9,000 new designs a day. So it's a totally different level.
My God.
Yeah, and the reason why that has grown so much is because, A, you're able to make clothes so cheaply now. That's technological innovation, but also trade liberalization that has allowed production to be really global, which is a function of the removal of some of the trade barriers where textile production, being the core of most economies, had been so closely guarded until 2005, when the multi-fiber agreement was dismantled and then business became really global. But what also fashion economists found out, that it is much more profitable and recession prone to be selling to non-wage earners, as we call them, the children, because they have an allowance, and parents will cut off their right hand during the recession not to cut their kids' allowance. They will cut anything and everything, business trips for the family, big appliances, newer car, but kids' allowances is what economists call inelastic source of revenue. And slowly but surely, and H&M was one of the first innovators to do that, to be pushing to the younger demographic in a way that was digitally accessible. And as Viola was saying, we have all been talking against fast fashion for 10 years, and there comes Shein out of nowhere. And right after Corona, goes to 80 billion over almost overnight. And everybody's shaking their heads going, what is happening? What is it that we're not doing? Is we're excluding the children from the conversations that we're having.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's, you know, they're using dark pattern. They're using all the methods you're saying you should use to businesses. So that means you have the whole idea of lottery. You have the feeling if you don't buy now, you don't get it anymore. So the different pattern or different methods they're using to give people the feeling, if I don't buy now, I make a mistake, and it's so cheap, I have to do it. You know, I even can chuck it away. And that is the thing. So they start to buy hauls for 1,000 euro, where you say, who will spend 1,000 euro? But they get, I don't know, 500 different textiles for it. So it's just amazing. So we have some influencers who even get paid by Shein in Germany. They got a truckload full of textiles, and they just wear 2 or 5 of them, and the rest they get chucked away. And that's a problem. So textiles are just chuck away products and nobody think about the resources. Maybe just to have one number, because we always think, you know, it's a textile, not so much a thing. Even a super fair green produced cotton shirt used 2,700 liters of water for production. That is as much as a person drinks in 2.5 years, you know? So if you think about water lag or where's the problem in environment, it's with those textiles. So that means every textile we don't buy, every textile we reuse, and especially if we use ourselves as presenters at different possibilities and single use is possible, that is the biggest thing we can do right now on that field. So, you know, if you go with a secondhand shirt, be proud of it. If you have a present for next birthday or Christmas or so, just buy something secondhand or send somebody a textile library about a mall or something, you know, and talk about it. I mean, is that how we can make the change? We have to make it sexy and attractive to the people. You know, it's not forbidden. It should be more attractive. So the new version of life that is within the planetary boundaries have to be sexy.
Right.
Wow. I'm sure that we have a lot of listeners who wear clothes and who want to talk to Viola and Nicolay. So we invite you to call in. The call-in phone number is 212-209-2877. Now's your time to call. 212-209-2877.
And while we're waiting for your calls, one more announcement. Paddle for the Sound helps keep Long Island Soundkeeper on the water. They track pollution at its source, prevent trash from getting into our waterways, protects our native migratory fish species, and more. Kayaktivists, go to www.savethesound.org/paddle. Any date, now through Sunday, August 6th, from your favorite paddle launch point, you can leave. Kayak, SUP, that's stand-up paddle board, and canoe. We've linked to it from our website, www.ecoradio.org.
Okay.
My wife was asking a question, so I'll let her be the one asking it.
Oh. What are we doing here in New York, let's say, for rags? Because they used to have a thing, you do your composting, and they took clothes. They don't take clothes anymore at the green market. So what do I do with rags? That I have some rags, but I just cut up a shirt to change the logo on it, and I now have this rag. It's cotton, but, you know, what do I do with that? I mean, in Germany, you're solving it. That's great, but what do we do here?
Nicolai, I mean, that's something you have to say, probably.
Well, they're not from New York.
Nothing. Yeah. I mean, I keep my sources in. Actually, New York has a law that's being proposed. The Fashion Pact is the nonprofit that's pushing it. It needs to get the right amount of political support to get passed through the New York House and Senate. At this point, nothing. What you do is you decide if the rags are so bad that you can't do anything with them. I would say probably the most environmentally safe thing to do is just to put them in the regular trash if you can't dispose of them in a particular way to a company that will recycle textiles.
You know, because the thing is, even if a cotton shirt and if it's full of textile, if it's full of chemicals, you know, and you would put it in your garden or so, maybe the cotton is degraded, but in the end you have the chemicals there. So that is a big thing. That's why we also demand that textiles get produced in a way that they are environmental friendly or just environmental friendly chemicals are allowed to. I mean, that should be the base, you know. I mean, rubbish or that land up in waste is actually a design mistake that shouldn't be allowed in the first place. And every textile, every product in the end should be designed in a way that it is, if it's get lost in the environment, that it's not harmful. That should be actually the base for everything.
Viola, you mentioned earlier that there's a whole list of things that you have to put on a label in order to buy clothing. And all I can think of is we have that for food, and we probably should have that for clothing. Yes. and anything else that's manufactured with pollution.
Exactly. So that's the thing. So it starts already with food, but of course it should be, as environmentalist, I have to say, it should be much more standing on it. But that's the idea of the so-called European textile strategy that is just to become implemented in different laws in Europe now. So the idea is that you have something like a label, so a tag that is on every textile, but in a way that is within the fiber, so nothing that you can cut out also, and that all the informations are in there. But we are just fighting right now with different lobby organizations and especially the fossil fuel industry against us, is how much information should be in there. You know, for me, it should be all the information is in there, not just is it of polyester or is it cotton or is it mixed material. It should be also in there which kind of chemicals are in there. But I think even there should be in there how much resources are used for this textile, and how much climate damage does this textile in this production made, so that as a consumer in the end, I really can decide, do I want to buy this or do I want to buy that? In a moment, I can't see it. You know, I just see the price and that's everything. And I think transparency is the biggest thing we can aim for to get something or to get behind this glamour of the textile industry who is so polluting.
And our number is 212-209-2877. We have a caller. You're on the air.
Yes. Oh, hi. Beautiful show. I'm so interested. You must be familiar with the PFAS history as well, right?
Yes.
Okay. Sure. So here,
thanks for bringing that up.
Yes. PFAS was actually, you know, I'm a chemist, I'm a pharmacist, so for me it was started with my detox work, was actually the PFAS, this endless chemicals, those kind of fluorochemicals. They look so super nice because they are in our tons, they are on our textiles and make everything waterproof. But the big problem is that there's nothing that can degrade them. So in the end, if they land up somewhere in the countryside, in the air, in the water, they stay there. And I think especially in the US, you are aware about what they can do with people. And that is a problem. And that was our first fight with the outdoor textile industry, because these textiles were normally made with PFAS. So perpolyfluorinated colloids, they were on every textile. And it's, Gore-Tex, that was the whole idea about, was to have a membrane made of this. And it was a big fight for us to say, you know, we had a campaign, the detox campaign, that tackled 80 different brands worldwide to said, you know, you have to get rid of this stuff. And they made it. They proved it is possible. I mean, it was a hard fight. We get support from so many thousand people around the world who helped to make that possible. And they proved it is possible. And now it become normal in Europe. You know, if you are, just a random textile producer and you have still PFAS on your textile, so people, oh my God, really PFAS? So that is actually what we have to do. It has to be forbidden by law, and that should be the next step, that it is possible. Big companies proved already.
Right.
Nick, anything to add?
Well, yeah. The politics here was that five years ago, they started to regulate, and they would do it one by one, but the variety is such that they could, not manufacture with this particular PFAS, but change one bond here or there, and that wouldn't be regulated. You know, in the U.S., it's a terrible problem, because they pose as, oh, we're regulating this, but in fact they didn't, because it would just, you know, change to a slightly different formulation.
One sentence on this. We demand the whole group has to be forbidden, not just one PFAS. All PFAS has to be forbidden.
The drug companies play when they're going off patent. They switch it up just enough
to add to the caller's question. It's going to be very tricky in the U.S. because there's still textile industry left here. The textile industry now is rebranded to mostly serve the military, first responder equipment, and what they call high tech, even smart clothing now.
Wow.
And that's all based on this. So the U.S. really has its own lobbying, the U.S. and Canada, and is those high end textiles that are being used in, as Viola said, weather dangers, first responders, protective to whoever's wearing protective clothing. But until we have an alternative, as Viola said, there's some alternatives for waterproof clothing, moving into those, you know, textiles that are military and government used. It's going to be a fight in the U.S. There's only two states at this point that are proposing state level legislation that has not gone through their state houses. One is New York. One is California. California is trying to mandate what Viola was explaining about the recycling in Europe. So the mandatory collection of textiles separately. New York is trying to mandate circular ID, as was what they're trying to have, like a anything that's sold in New York will have to have a sustainability tracking number, sustainability score. If that ever gets passed, I'll be very surprised.
Well, it's time to wrap up. So thanks for joining us this morning. For more information, go to ecoradio.org. That's ecoradio.org. In addition to an archive of our past shows, we have information on a variety of environmental topics. We thank Rudy Liu for suggesting this show from a CNN article on fast fashion.
Thanks also to the Princeton Environmental Film Festival screening of Fast Fashion, The Real Price of Low-Cost Fashion, in October 2021. We'd love to stay in touch with you. So those of you online, please go to www.ecoradio.org and sign up for our email list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. We're at WBAI Ecologic, no dashes.
And I want to thank Sally and Donna for bringing this important environment issue to my attention. Before, the only time I thought about fashion was to quote Oscar Wilde, "Fashion is something so hideous that it needs to be changed every month."
On Saturday, August 5th at 1 p.m., there will be a town hall for all in the Pacifica Network who are running for local station boards. Our Sally is one of them. It will be run as a discourse debate and will deal with two issues, the mission statement and the fiscal crisis. Any Zoom number will get you there, but try 669-900-6833. The meeting ID is 895-0099-3778. Again, the ID is 895-0099-3778. The passcode is 629678. That's 629678. Go to meetings on the WBAI.org for these details.
Join us next week, Wednesday, August 9th, to hear about the worst possible environmental disaster, nuclear war, with our guest, Nobel Peace Prize winner Alice Slater. August 9th is the anniversary of the Nagasaki bombing. To support Ecologic, you can choose from our many premiums at ecologic.wbai.org, become a member, or contribute monthly as an Ecologic BAI buddy. Call 212-209-2950, and we have some good nuclear news next week, too. We love to see those Ecologic buddy pledges.
WBAI is community radio, and there's lots of ways to get involved. And, of course, we always need your donations. We need your contributions to support everything that makes a broadcast happen. Engineers, electricity, equipment upkeep, rent. Pledging now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We are always glad to have you with us for Ecologic, live or on the archives. If you listen live, we may be able to take your call and answer your question.
This show will be on the WBAI archives in just 5 or 10 minutes. Our thanks to our engineer, Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without our wonderful engineers.
The Environment TV will be playing the video version of Ecologic's interview with Danielle Whitaker on birds and humans' sense of smell. That's this Sunday, August 6th, 11 a.m. on MNN. Check your cable listings for channel 11 a.m. Sunday. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert. Special thanks to Charlie Olson of the Environment TV for all his tech help.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us next Wednesday, August 9th at 10 a.m. with our guest, Nobel Peace Prize winner Alice Slater. Or you can join us on the archives or find us on the archives. Check our website for details. Thanks for being our listeners.
See the sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So solar power, inexpensive energy. So WBAI rebuild. Our steady stream of BAI Buddy monthly subscriptions had built terrific momentum at its launch, and we need to rebuild that interrupted momentum again. Fill out the secure online form on our website at WBAI.org to donate $10 or more each month directly from your checking account or credit card, and you will get a WBAI tote bag, the member perks card for discounts around the city. You'll be able to donate in the name of OutFM. You'll be able to cut down on-air fund drive days. And this will support WBAI for as little as $10 a month. That's 33 cents a day.
Activist Sharon Salam speaks out for WBAI.
We should be moving forward, collecting the funds that we need to make sure that our station is whole and that it can do its job as it has done for me in the past. When all of this stuff happened to me many, many years ago in 1989, I didn't get very many opportunities to speak out in regards to the wrong that was done to my son and the other boys in the Central Park Jogger case, as it was called at that time. Very few people stepped up. Yes, Like It Is was there, WBAI was there, and a few others. Majority of those stations that let people like myself speak and tell them what was going on the other side, those stations are gone. If we lose WBAI, where do we go to get our words out? Where do we go if you've been arrested unjustly? Where do you go if someone's taken your children unfairly? Where do you go to seek justice? We must keep this station alive. Yeah. Alive. WBAI. No
justice. This is listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.
WBAI New York, thank you, Sharon Salam. Where do we go to get our words out? Where do we go? Well, we have WBAI, thanks to listeners just like you. It's a